first and foremost, how are you doing during this time of madness, this global pandemic? How are you?
I'm just like everyone, I guess. I'm still down in Sarasota, Florida. I usually stay here for the playoffs, and so I'm not really behind schedule. Last year I got home earlier, but Lightning got knocked out, as you know, the first round. But no, I usually go back around early May, so I haven't decided yet. Just waiting for time to pass and make a decision.
Well, I'm glad you're safe and sound, and you're still obviously such a big name in the National Hockey League with everything you've done and everything you're doing. Stewie, start it out. What would you like to ask Scotty Bowman?
Mr. Bowman, you coach some you coach some great players over the years. You know, Brandon Shanahan, Scott, Stevie Yzerman, Luke Robitaille. They've gone on to become managers and GMs throughout the NHL. Did you see that in them when they were players?
Some of them, as you know, are pretty quiet guys, and other ones ask a lot of questions. And I think when you're running a team, though, you don't really think about who might be this and that. You know, some of them can surprise you. But one I did mention when I was in Montreal, actually, he was always above the curve as Jacques Lemaire. You know, he's a quiet guy, and you know, after a game or something, you know, when things didn't go the way you wanted to, we'd be skating around before the practice would start. And I remember a couple of times he'd come up to me and surprise me and say, you know why we didn't do well last night, or you know why we didn't win. And I'd say, well, a lot of reasons, Jock, I guess. And no, he said, did you see our passing? He'd come up with something like, I remember one time he'd say, did you see how we passed the puck last night? We never made a pass. Like, you know, he would like critique the entire group. And I would say, yeah, that's right. Maybe we should work on that today. But, you know, he was a very quiet guy. So, I mean, you know, when I had him as a junior, it was so strange. When I had him as a junior, he was I think he was about 18 at the time, before he went up to the Canadians, and he was just a great offensive player. He was so, he could come down the wing, and he could shoot that. I mean, he had a great shot, scored goals at will in junior, and but didn't do much defense. And I used to prod him a lot. I'd say, you know, Jock, you're not going to make the NHL, I'm telling you. And most of the players on that team, because there was no draft, there'd be five or six that would go up and play in the NHL. And he was one of them. And I'd say, you know, you better start. You know, you're not going to, you get up to Toe Blake, he's not going to play you. You see what's going to happen. And the next thing you know, he turned his, well, I left juniors and he did too. And I went to St. Louis, and he beat us one game when he was 20 years old in the final. Scored the winning goal in overtime, I think. But anyways, I saw him later on, and you know, he became such a two-way player, and he was a defensive guru, and he beat our team so easily in '95 by just he knew how to play a good defensive game, and then he went to Minnesota. So he became a very, very, he didn't last long as a coach. I don't know why, but he just didn't like it, I guess. But he was, the job he did in Minnesota, besides what he did in New Jersey.
Berkey.
Hey, Scotty, it's Berkey. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Yeah, it's good to be on, Brian. Good to hear you guys.
A little bit along the lines of what Stewie just asked. I've heard people say, you know, like you had the great team in 76-77 that only lost 8 games. I've heard people say, guys, just when they have those teams like that, they just have to open the gate. But it really is difficult to manage star players, isn't it?
Well, we had so many, and I was fortunate in Montreal, Brian, because I had coached some of these players, especially both Serge and Jacques Lemaire. I had coached them in junior when they first came down, for kids just trying to make a junior team and then going on. And you know, I'm sure you know the story with Cliff Fletcher and I. getting mixed up with Serge. We were looking after all the young players. But no, I think you're right. It's you know, having all those players, they kind of police themselves. And I was watching some of the games in the late 70s. They put them on the NHL Network, and I was just you don't think of it at the time, but you bring up Serge Savard, and boy, I mean, you know, it didn't seem like he left the ice in those final games. They only showed the final game, but yeah, he's one player, Brian, that you brought up that I knew how great he was, because look how much he played and how many times he led teams to the Stanley Cup. And I remember talking to Bobby Clark about 10 years ago when we were having a beer somewhere and about one of the Hall of Fame luncheons, and he was saying we were talking about the hockey, and as everyone knows, it was a big rivalry between us and Philadelphia, and Bobby, we were talking about different players, and he said, you know, all the defensemen that I ever played against, the one that caused me the biggest difficulty to try to beat was Serge Savard. And I thought that was pretty off the cuff kind of, but it was so true. But those players were very close. They stayed together. I think it's the tough part now, Brian, is you're going to get some that'll stay together, but maybe a couple, two or three, and with what we have now, you're going to get new players coming in, and those guys are so crucial to how they mold your team and your core. In fact, the coaches are having a cafe session about three times a week, and they brought that up about how do you handle the core of the team, and it was very interesting dialogue.
We're in conversation with Scotty Bowman, the Hall of Fame head coach in the National Hockey League. Scotty, Berkey brought up the 1977 Habs. You could argue they're maybe the greatest team ever put together from the coach all the way down. How do you think your 2002 Red Wings team would fare against that team? I mean, when you look at the Hall of Famers on that 2002 Red Wings team and you look at that 77 Habs team, if those two teams hit the ice, what would happen?
Well, it's a different era, but you're right. That team in Detroit was put together with a lot of money, as everyone knows in those days. We didn't have the cap system, and I give a lot of credit though to both. When you look at the way the teams were constructed in Montreal, Sam Pollock was such a visionary. I mean, he had a good advantage, but he took care of it, and he made so many trades to acquire draft picks. As we know, the league expanded in 67, and it went from 6 to 12, and people would know, we didn't get a lot of NHL players. The six teams got about three NHL players, but there was a lot of minor league players that were pretty good players. The only reason they weren't in the NHL, of course, is only about 100, over 100 jobs, and they proved themselves, a lot of the teams, but Sam made trades, and he took advantage of the system. They had surplus players, and the new expansion teams needed, I mean, they got impatient maybe, but they needed players because we only got 18 players, and there was no, the draft had just started. In fact, the first really good draft of totally open was 1969, and we started in 67, and they held on, those six teams held on to most of their good young players on their sponsor teams, and the first open draft wasn't for 2 years later, and so you had to scramble for players. But Sam traded players and got very good draft picks, because that Canadiens team was built, if you look at the draft picks, LaFleur was the first pick overall, was an Oakland pick. Steve Shutt was the third pick, and that was another team's pick. And then Bob Gainey was the eighth pick. 3 years in a row, getting, you wouldn't be able to do that now. But Kenny Holland in Detroit, he's very similar to Sam Pollock. These people started in junior hockey. Sam Pollock started with the Canadiens in 1947, running a softball team in the summer and running a junior team in the wintertime. That was his first job. And, you know, what a record he had. He worked with the Canadians from 47 to 64, and virtually through the 50s, he was the key guy. I mean, he ran the farm system. He knew where all the players came from. And you know, and Kenny Holland was a similar type. And he did the same thing with Detroit. I mean, I give Kenny a lot of credit because he became a scout. I mean, he was a minor league goalie in the early 80s, and he became a scout for the Red Wings, and he worked his way up, and then he became the general manager. And naturally, we had the resources to go out and get players, but he still had to sell them on the idea of coming to that team. So it would be a tough call because I think there was about 9 Hall of Fame players on each team. I looked it up the other day. There's another one coming from Detroit. I'm sure when he finally hangs them up is Pavel Datsyuk. So that yes. would be 10. But it was so hard to the parity. There was maybe better teams in the 90s against the Wings. You know, the Avalanche were a good team. Ken Hitchcock was in Dallas. They were a strong team. I mean, there were some pretty good teams in the league. And I don't know if the Montreal team. I mean, Boston was very strong in the early 70s, and the Rangers Emil Francis had built a really good team at that time. And then Philadelphia. They came on, and I mean, they were an amazing story to be such an expansion team in 1970. Well, they were in 70. They won in 74 and 75. They were only in the league 7 years, so they put together a team. But I think it's different eras, and I don't think our team in Montreal wouldn't ever take anything away from it. I don't think we had the competition that the team in Detroit had in the 90s. So. It would be a great series to see. The defense corps of Montreal was superb. I don't think anybody will ever put a defense together like that with Lapointe and Savard and Robinson, three Hall of Fame players for sure. And we had a couple of really good players in Detroit with Nick Lidstrom on defense and guys like that. But I think up front. The Red Wings have had quite a bit more offense. I watched our Montreal team play, and with the way we could play defense, and I watched the games against Boston, and those defensemen, that was the difference in the series. They could get the puck over the blue line, and they could, and it was no center line. That was the big thing. You get the puck over the blue line, and you chase it down. And now you're not in a lot of trouble. So I couldn't say that it would be. I think there's been some other great teams as well, but those two had so many Hall of Fame players.
True enough. We have about 5 minutes left with Scotty Bowman. So Stewie, why don't you ask one, and then Berkey jump in after.
Yeah, we were talking about the best teams. When you won the Cup with Pittsburgh in 92, you guys only had 39 wins, essentially a 500 record. Would you consider that the hardest Stanley Cup of your 9 to win?
Yeah, that would probably have been the one because we were behind 3-1. Washington had a good, terrific defense corps, and we got behind 3-1 in that series, and we... You know, that team was built the year before by Bob Johnson, the late Bob Johnson. He was an offensive... Bob Johnson and Herb Brooks were two of the great coaches of their time because they could generate offense. You know, they were really... That was what their game was. And I was fortunate. I didn't do much that year. I was asked to take over and hold the job for Bob, hoping he would maybe come back with a miracle. Unfortunately, didn't. But... that was an offensive team that could really score. I mean, we won so many games the year before on offense, and then that team, we got in trouble in the playoffs, and we all of a sudden we had to go into Washington because they were the high seed. We were down 3-1, and we had to go in and prolong the series, and we did that game, and we came back and won the game 6 pretty handily, but then game 7, we had to play. We just decided we're not. This team can score too. Their defense corps was terrific. They could score. There was three or four guys that had nearly 20 goals. So we just played a straight defensive game, and Mario was the one that that designed the game and plan, and we did it, and we won that game, a very close game, and then we rolled from there. But that was the closest one. Yes, you're right that you know, we had a great team, but you know, when you to repeat, sometimes it's not as easy, and that proved it that year. But we rolled from then on, and we had a tough series with the Rangers, and we won, I think, in six games, and then we beat Chicago. But that would be the toughest one of them all, for sure. Maybe another one. We got behind against Boston in '79. It wasn't the final, though. It was a conference final, and that was the game when we came from behind with the shorthand, with the power play goal, when they had too many men on the ice.
Go ahead, Berkey.
Okay, Scotty, last question then. Tell us about coaching Nick Lidstrom. He's such a classy guy and such a great player. What was that like?
I just finished reading his book. You're right, Brian. The players dubbed him the perfect human. And you would know because you were involved in the league, I think, at that time. But, yeah, Nick had a trick that not many people ever could figure it out. We had the left wing lock playing pretty solid. And the left wing lock at that time, he was the reason we tried it. He played the middle of the rink. We had the rink divided into three, and he played right in the middle. And on his right side was his partner, the right defenseman, and on his left side was either a forward, was either a left wing or a centerman. And if the puck ever beat any of those guys, he could go from one side to the other. His lateral movement was very good. And then he had another. He would sort of leave an opening on the boards. And then at the last minute, he put his stick, but he didn't put it ahead. He put it sort of behind, parallel or a little bit behind, and eventually the guy's going to run into it. And, of course, they come out of the lockout. People said, well, you know, that Lidstrom's trick is going to get a lot of penalties now. And he could adapt. That's the thing he did so well. He was so good at, you know, he wasn't a puck carrier, but Nick Lidstrom, to me, was one of the premier players I've seen in history on defense. That, I mean, so much different than all the other great ones, because his passing was superb. We didn't have analytics, but we had a guy that used to do a chart for us. Every time any player on our team got the puck, and we wanted to chart what's the next play, what happened to the puck. Did the other team, did he have to get rid of it, or did we keep the puck? And Nick was always in the high 90s. I mean, he got the puck, and we still got the puck. I mean, and that's what he could do so well. And I just don't know how he adapted so well, but he was such an offensive and defensive guy. But his passing skills, I mean, there's a young kid now, Brian, that I watch a lot of games of, playing for the Vancouver team, your one of your old teams, that young Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes.
And when he gets the puck and makes a play, the Canucks still have the puck. He very seldom has a turnover. And those you ran teams, and those players, I mean, your teams in Anaheim, when you had Niedermeyer and you had Pronger, and you get those guys on defense, and they make, I mean, Niedermeyer was more a puck carrier, I think, than Chris was, but they not only did they take the puck off guys, but the next play they make, the team still has the puck. I think that's what I look and I look at these great defensemen, and the puck possession is the game, you know.